Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. My guest this week, returning champion to the show, former ANN columnist and the author of The Stray Dog of Anime, Films of Mamoru Oshii, it's Brian Rue. Brian, thanks a lot for coming back on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Zach.
So, second edition of your book's out. How long has it been since between editions here?
It's been 10 years.
10 years.
So, 10.
Why did I think it was shorter than that?
Yeah, no, the first edition came out in around June, I think, of 2004. So, looking at pretty much just about 10 years since that first edition came out. Yeah, because when the first edition came out, the book was out just around the time, or maybe a little bit after, Innocence came out, which is why I didn't write about Innocence in the first edition. So, yeah, I got a chance to rectify that and add in a few new films to the second edition.
Yeah, well, if you got 10 years worth of new material to work with, probably high time for a second edition. Was the idea always basically just to iterate your current book? Did you think, like, well, maybe it's time to just start over again, like start from scratch?
Yeah, my first thought was that I could basically kind of not really start from scratch, but kind of fill in some gaps in there, maybe in between the chapters, maybe fill out some of the films that I didn't have a chance to touch on before, like talking about anime stuff, maybe have a chapter on Dallas in there, maybe have a few more chapters on some of his other live action films like Red Spectacles and things like that, and kind of work those chapters into the book throughout. The way that it actually ended up working was that I just, and this is based on what my publisher preferred, is that I ended up taking the original book, so the chapters that I had there, I added three new chapters onto the end. So I have new chapters on Ghost in the Shell 2 Innocence, I have a new chapter on Skycrawlers, and I have a new chapter on Assault Girls. And then I also have a new conclusion, and that's totally rewritten. But then the existing text of the book, I went back and I massaged it a little bit. I made a few changes here and there, but for the most part, you know, a lot of that is unchanged. So they didn't really want me going back a whole lot and making changes to what I had previously written. So it's the book that we had before plus just really revised and updated, I think is a good way to put it.
Well, I mean, if you say, like, a hypothetical person were to ask me, hey, what are the two, like, most sort of movies that you would say, like, hey, if you're going to get into Mamoru Oshii, what should you watch? Right now, I would say Innocence and Skycrawlers. So those seem like really important films to have in a book about his career and his product.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking the pretty much the same thing, too. I mean, you know, I had this book that, yeah, it didn't cover. I mean, I think Innocence was probably the most, you know, I love Skycrawlers. But I think Innocence was probably the most kind of crucial of the films to get in there. And to be honest, that's probably the chapter that I'm least satisfied with, just because there is so much more that I could have said in that chapter. You know, because of the structure of the book, I had to, my existing the new chapters that I was writing, I had to kind of model them on the existing chapters and follow the same general format, and I couldn't have them be way longer than a lot of the others. But there's just there was so much more on Ghost in the Shell 2 Innocence that I would really have loved to have put in the book, but that I just for space reasons that I just kind of maybe alluded to or didn't have enough time to go into. But I mean, I think it's I say that I'm happy with the final product, of course, and I think it turned out well. But yeah, I mean, I'm very happy that I got a chance to go back and revisit that and to include chapters on Innocence and Skycrawlers and Assault Girls. That's kind of it's maybe more of an interesting exercise than a film that you really sit down and watch for pleasure, perhaps.
Right.
I'll put it that way.
I mean, it does seem like if you were to take one of his films and just get a book out of just that, it would probably be Innocence, just because there's so much in there to unpack.
Like, right.
There's enough probably to get a short book out of just that movie alone.
Yeah, I mean, I would, if someday I was given the opportunity to write, because there have been... There's been the short British Film Institute, those BFI books. I know there's been one that Andrew Osmond put out on Spirited Away, and I know that there's actually one upcoming on Akira. And so, yeah, I mean, if somebody came to me and was like, hey, would you want to choose an anime film to write, a short little, book about, Innocence would definitely be my choice for something to kind of put up there.
Right. So in those 10 years, since it's been a decade, and obviously when you wrote the book, you felt one way about Oshii. Let's narrow it down to Oshii as an artist. Has anything in your attitude towards him or his work changed in those 10 years? And if so, how?
I think my attitude in general towards film, I think, has changed. I mean, the book, the current structure of the book is not... if I was going to go back and do a project writing about Oshii from scratch, I think I would have approached it in a very different way. I don't know if I would have broken it down the way that I did, kind of chronologically, film by film. I might have grouped things more thematically that might have given me a better way to approach things.
Yeah.
Just because... When I – and just kind of going back into my history. So the first I did a master's degree at University of Texas at Austin. My master's is in Asian cultures and languages. And my master's thesis was on religious and mythological themes in Oshii's kind of science fiction films. And that actually formed the basis – for the first few chapters for my book. So that's how, after I was done with my master's program, I sat down and I kind of rewrote some things into some basic chapters. And that's what kind of got the interest in the book going. I worked on the book for, for a year, year and a half, And so I got all that out. After I had actually finished the book, then I started in on a PhD program, and my PhD is from Indiana University in communication and culture. And in that program, I was studying media and film, and a little bit of kind of performance and ethnography in there too. But when I wrote the first edition of the book, I didn't really, I was coming at it more from a kind of, maybe more of an interdisciplinary Japanese culture, Japanese literature point of view, rather than necessarily a film studies point of view. So yeah, if I was going to kind of do things again, I would tackle it from a very different angle. And so I'm not sure that my attitude towards his films has changed in 10 years so much as my, I guess, impressions and approach to film in general has changed because I've had more experience, taking classes on films from great professors, and also teaching film at the university level. So
right. So in other words, I mean, it sounds like what you're basically saying is like your attitude towards him or his art really hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if I would say that. Yeah, my attitude has really changed. I mean, I'm not really sure what my attitude is. I mean, it depends, particularly on the film. And I mean, one of the reasons why I kind of wanted to focus on Oshii's films in the way that I did is because I kind of had this idea that by focusing on a director that had these really interesting themes and really interesting visuals, who wasn't who wasn't Hayao Miyazaki, that might kind of engender a little bit more. Is possibly kind of a bid for respect a little bit for Japanese animation among people who study literature and film, that say, okay, here's another interesting film director, and these are some of the really interesting themes and tropes that you see throughout his films, and just kind of promoting it that way. And so, I mean, I still think that, and we can talk about this a little bit later if you want, that is an approach that's still needed to a certain extent. There has, of course, since in the last 10 years, there's been a whole lot more writing, particularly in academic circles, on anime and manga. And I think that, I certainly wouldn't want to say that a book like mine had anything to do with it. It's probably something, because there were a whole lot of currents that kind of were developing in the early 2000s that kind of led to the publication. I just was kind of in the right place at the right time for a lot of this, and so I kind of got into some of those currents, and that's why a particular publisher was interested in my book, at the particular point in time that I proposed it. So I'm just rambling here, but getting back to your original question, probably not. I probably wouldn't say that my attitude towards the actual films has really changed a whole lot in 10 years, but there's just been so much kind of around it that has changed.
All right. Well, have you noticed any differences in the way people perceive him, or the way people receive his work, or just sort of general opinion?
I think Innocence probably had a lot to do with kind of the current perception of Oshii's work. So, I mean, when somebody thinks of Oshii currently, I think a lot of people probably have in their mind, something that they might have seen in Innocence. Back when I was writing the first edition of the book, his most recent films at that time, so Avalon had recently come out, so that live action film, and his films before that, he had of course Ghost, the first Ghost in the Shell films, that's kind of what his name and reputation was being based on. And of course you had people like the Wachowskis, who cited him as an influence when they were making The Matrix and things like that. So this kind of, I don't know if you want to say maybe cerebral action could be a good way to describe how the perception of him at the time that I was writing that. But then since the first edition came out, particularly with Innocence, and then things, something like Skycrawlers and Assault Girls, I think you've had a shift in the perception of him, maybe a little bit, as being even more cerebral, more. I'm not sure. I certainly wouldn't want to say alienating, but I wouldn't – I'd call him kind of a cool filmmaker. I mean, you know, he's not generally one to, often – he doesn't usually do tear jerkers or anything like that. He doesn't engage the emotions in that way. He's often, a lot of his scenes are very calm. Somebody, of course, might describe his films as being slow, perhaps. And I think, a lot you see that in a lot of his more recent films. But I think one of the things that people tend to forget about Oshii, and maybe we'll see a little bit more of this in the new live action Pat Labor series that's coming up, is that for a long time he worked in comedy, and he's done some fairly really funny comedic things, that's not really what he's known for these days. I mean, so he's really not known for being, a very funny director. But going back to some of, something like Urusei Yatsura, or, some of the Pat Labor things, the previous Pat Labor animation that he directed, it is very comedic. So I think it'll be interesting to see, talking about perception of him, to see how much that from this kind of new Pat Labor might get picked up, perhaps, and change the popular opinion of him, even though that's always kind of been there to a greater or lesser degree.
Yeah, that's interesting. I I think people don't think of him that way because he hasn't made comedy in how long?
Yeah. Well. Actually, there was a film that he made. I want to 2007, 2008. It was the Lives of the Fast Food Grifters. It was that film that was. It was all kind of. CG like photographs. Cutouts. So he was animating photographs that had been taken. That actually was. I got a chance to watch it, and of course I have the DVDs of it, but that was actually a fairly funny movie. But unfortunately, that's not something that really got very wide distribution. I mean, it played in a few film festivals. I saw it playing in New York one time, and it's only been released on DVD in Japan and France, I believe. But that's actually kind of a late period Oshii that's actually pretty darn funny. It's just that a lot of people haven't seen it.
Right. But in general, he doesn't make comedies anymore.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, and that's not what he's known for. Yeah, so.
All right. So, I mean, so you're paying attention to the new Pat Labor.
Yes.
It's they've streamed an episode of it. Mm-hmm. It was being promoted very heavily when I was there for Anime Japan. They had a big full-size Pat Labor in the back. lots of promotion for that. I watched a bit of that episode zero. And I don't know if your take on it was the same as mine, but while I was there, I watched a bunch of Japanese TV, in the evenings when we were working. Mm-hmm. Turn TV on and watch one of, the fabulous NHK's, generally shitty programming. and Japanese live-action TV, based on my experience with it and having, spent, about a week, 10 days, in the evenings watching it, having a few hours of it on, it doesn't look great. It looks cheap. It looks like everything is very soap opera looking, and Pat Labor is no different. It looks like kind of a chintzy live action, primetime program that you would see on like NHK. I was a little surprised at how I was like, oh, this looks like a cheapo, primetime live action show. I don't know. I was a little surprised by it, but he's not directing it. He's just writing it, right?
So the way that this Pat Labor live action series is going to work is that I don't know what you want to call it. If you want to call it like a series of short films, because, they're doing this kind of in between, distribute. So they're releasing these live action. I think each one, other than episode zero, is maybe about 40 minutes or so. They're releasing them into theaters, but then they're also going to be available for sale on DVD and Blu-ray at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, do you call these short films? Do you call this like more of a TV series? But yeah, I mean, you're right. It does kind of have the look and feel of a TV series. Oshii is directing. He is directing some of them, but there are other directors who are going to be directing some of the other episodes. And I think that's going to be particularly interesting to see their take on that. The ones that there's actually one director of the new Pat Labor that I'm particularly interested in. His name is Takanori Tsujimoto, and he's directed a few things that have come out on DVD over here. He did a couple of short kind of action. He's more of like an action director. Mm-hmm. So he did a couple of kind of short-ish films called Hard Revenge Millie. Another one that came out recently over here was called Red Tears, which was kind of a martial arts vampire film. But there's actually one that's coming out later this summer that I really want to get a hold of. I've seen it once, but it's called Bushido Man. And so Tsujimoto, he directed it, but you can I think you can see a definite influence from Oshii in this film, even though Oshii didn't have actually anything to do with it. And part of this is because some of Tsujimoto's earlier work, he's been involved in all of the kind of omnibus films that Oshii has done. So Oshii's he's done a few films that are just kind of compilations of shorter segments, and he did one called Killers. He did one called Zan Kill, and he did one it was female fast food grifters. And in each one of those, Tsujimoto had kind of a short film. And so I think it'll be interesting to see what he does with Pat Labor, particularly because, I mean, Bushido Man, I mean, it recently got a lot of festival play, and it's very low budget, so kind of like Pat Labor. I mean, we've seen that he can work very well with not a whole lot of budget. And some of the other directors, I'm really interested to see kind of where they take the whole Pat Labor mythos and franchise. But yeah, I would definitely agree that it does look a little cheap. I mean, those Pat Labor robots, especially, I mean, yeah, they spent a good bunch of money putting a real machine together. But then in some of the CG shots, it's just like, I don't know. But Pat Labor's never, even though, it's, called Pat Labor, it's, it's named after the robot, it's always been more about, the characters and their interactions than the actual robot itself. So, if they do that well and interesting, I think it'll be good. So,
yeah, so long as they stick with the strong element of Pat Labor, which is the relationship dramedy stuff.
That'll
work out. Okay, so that's interesting. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Anime Academia sort of as a thing.
Sure. Because
we had Charles Dunbar on a short while ago, and we got into this just a little bit, but I wanted to get your take on it because your name is always in the list whenever it's like, okay, people who are academics who write about anime. It's like you, Charles, a few others that, always their names always come up. Napier and mm-hmm. Helen McCarthy and Jonathan Clements. It's kind of the same, 9-10 people maybe. And I was lamenting, and I've been lamenting this, that academia and anime is singularly obsessed with World War II, and I would pay lots of money to get them to stop talking about Hayao Miyazaki and Osamu Tezuka for 5 minutes, long enough to notice that other people have made things. And I think it gives anime kind of the short shrift, or at least not not giving it enough credit for the extremely wide variety of available material and the number of auteurs that exist in anime, which is, you know, there's not a ton of them, but certainly are plenty, Oshii being one, that get no attention from these guys. I guess maybe because they can only get grants or can only get approval to write about somebody famous like Hayao Miyazaki. But kind of sick of the World War II and the Miyazaki and the Tezuka. Like, if I got to read one more thing about how this is actually about the atom bomb, it's like, oh, fuck this. Like, enough. I'm just sort of curious what your take on that whole thing is and if you're seeing anything exciting out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to be honest, we kind of have the same inclination in studies in English of live action Japanese film too.
Yeah.
So it's not just anime. I mean, you know, Joe, count how many things have been written out there on Akira Kurosawa compared to, like, you know, the
anyone
whole
else? Yeah.
You know, oh, you know, the whole array of possible Japanese films that somebody could write about. Yes, Kurosawa, he was good, but yeah, I kind of feel the same way to a certain extent about Miyazaki. Like, you know, okay, yeah, Miyazaki's, yeah, I mean, it, and it's not to, you know, downplay his influence, but yeah, I mean, there are definitely other people, other, you know, directors, other, and, you know, not even just directors. I mean, you know, I'd love to, you know, have a book out about, you know, a particular, you know, working Japanese animator. But I mean, and that's, I think that's one of the problems too, is that it's, I think a lot of people who are in film studies don't really know how to write about animation. I mean, it's different than writing about film. I mean, I guess it depends. You can approach it in a similar way and talk about, you know, the themes and the motifs. But, you know, if you're actually going to kind of break it down, on a shot by shot basis, you know, I think that that a lot of people just don't know necessarily what to do with that, how to write about anime. Talking about academia, right now is kind of an odd thing for me. You know, I mean, I would say, you know, I probably am in what you might call an anime academic, but right now, I mean, if you had to, like, when I've applied for conferences and stuff, so, you know, and every time you apply to an academic conference, it's like, so what is your affiliation? So what university are you with? Well, right now I'm not actually with a uni. I mean, I work for a university. You know, I'm staff at a university, but I'm not a faculty member. So, yeah, I earned my PhD. I finished that up, and I got that in May of 2012. So right now I've wound down kind of the second year that I've been out on the academic job market, you know, looking around at positions, mostly in film studies departments and, you know, other places teaching film. And, you know, there's just not a whole lot out there as far as, you know, teaching positions goes. I mean, I've heard for one position that I applied to, I think last year, you know, they got, you know, 200 applicants for, and, you know, these are 200 people who have PhDs who are qualified to teach, you know, to teach in a film studies program. So, you know, there's just not that much out there. So, you know, talking about, you know, am I an academic? I, you know, kind of, sort of, you know, I mean, I'm not actually in a university right now, but luckily working as a staff member at a university, I can kind of, I still have, you know, good library access, so I can get to a lot of things. One of the important things that I think that has kind of come out since, you know, in the last 10 years, since the first edition of my book, there have been, there it seems like there has been a lot more acceptance in academic journals to accept pieces on Japanese animation and comics. I mean, we've got a whole journal, the Mechademia, which I've been associated with off and on. I've done some I've done some kind of proofreading for them. I've contributed a few pieces for them. But I think that that's definitely been a good trend. That a lot of places have seen that. Okay, this is something that is that people have an interest in, and that we can kind of cater to. You know, I don't know what's going to be coming out in the future as far as, who are going to be the next people who teach and study, and, perhaps teaching and studying about Japanese animation. I'm not sure, based on the job market that's out there, how many kind of younger scholars are really who are probably going to be the ones who are more likely to have interest in Japanese animation, how many of these people are going to be able to kind of find jobs to be able to teach about these things.
Okay. Well, that's interesting to know. I personally just want to see more variety. I just want to see more variety. I love reading about this stuff from an academic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You just get the same stuff over and over again. Like, I got to read another goddamn essay about Spirited Away. I'm going to put a gun in my head. It's... I'm more interested now in reading academic work about Miyazaki post-Wind Rises. Because I think the Wind Rises recolors his entire filmography in such a way that now you have to look at that as the period on the end of a very strong sentence. And you have to consider it. And I would say Wind Rises, if you're writing seriously about him as a filmmaker, would dominate any new writing about him and his work.
Of course, that's just more writing about World War II.
I think it's more writing about him as a person. Like, if you're paying attention to that movie, it's about him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in my opinion. Anyway. Not necessarily the World War II angle, but what he's saying about art, what he's saying about artists, what he's saying about genius, what he's saying about the public interpretation of your art. Like, as a filmmaker, as an artist, that movie is so much about him. Like, it's such a strained metaphor for him and his life that I do kind of want to see more writing about Miyazaki now, with that coloring the rest of his filmography. But that aside, I just wish, that's what I really want to see, is something other than World War II and Miyazaki.
I mean, I would, talking about Miyazaki and, something that came out recently, I mean, I would love to see, and there have been things about this in other languages. I think there's something on a book on Italian on him, but Takahata, who just had the name of the film completely escaping me right now.
Something or other.
Yeah.
That's the name of it. One. Princess something
yeah,
or other.
Exactly. compared to Miyazaki, I mean, I think, personally, if I was going to sit down and watch, generally speaking, a Takahata or a Miyazaki film, I would probably gravitate more towards the Takahata side of kind of the Ghibli output rather than the Miyazaki side. He's, definitely, and, talking about, a creator who has had, great longevity. I'd love to see stuff about him. One of the things that, and I do want to mention this, one of the things that I do think is good about something like Mechademia is that it has brought out, in a number of their issues kind of scattered throughout, they've been, I think, pretty good about translating Japanese criticism into English, which I think is something that I'd like to see more of. I'd like to see more of this dialogue between English language scholars and Japanese language scholars, and because there's a whole body of work on in English on Japanese anime and manga, but I'm not sure how many people, you know, who study these things, you know, necessarily have a really good grasp of Japanese and being able to kind of delve into a lot of the kind of primary source materials and really getting into that. And so, I mean, I think that's very critical. I mean, you know, and you know, that's definitely kind of a failing of my own. I mean, my Japanese is, unfortunately, I haven't been able to keep up with it as well as I would like. So it's quite a bit rusty at this moment. But yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely kind of a, if you're going to be studying something like anime or manga, I mean, you know, if I was going to give one piece of advice to somebody who is interested in that kind of thing, it would be to, you know, definitely, you know, have a really good, solid grasp of the Japanese language so you can, you know, so you can go and do kind of some archival research and go and look through things and have some kind of one-on-one first-person interviews so you can really kind of get a better sense of everything that's out there.
Right. Yeah, definitely important. Okay, so we got a bunch of Twitter questions for you.
Okay.
So maybe we should get to those.
Sure.
All right. Land of Obscusion asks, are you seriously doing academic work about anime? Still a reaction that you get or see from other academics? Or has that gone away?
Well, to be honest, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, nobody has said that to my face in a while.
To your face, okay.
Yeah, so I remember this kind of sticks out in my mind when I was an undergrad, and I was, you know, my undergraduate degree is in philosophy, so, you know, that shows.
So
what am I going to do with a degree in philosophy? I'm going to go on to graduate school. So at the time I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, and I was talking with a Japanese politics professor, and so I knew I wanted to do something kind of, you know, Japan related, because I'd been taking the language and I'd studied abroad, and so I knew kind of I wanted to go down that course, and he was asking me like what specifically I was interested in, and I kind of sheepishly said, okay, well, you know, I'm kind of interested in you know, in Japanese animation. And you know, his response was like, okay, you know, I mean, that's good and all, I mean, you can be interested in that, but I mean, that's not something that you're going to, you know, study or write about academically. So I mean, what do you really want to study? You know, what's the thing that you're actually going to write about academically? So you know, that kind of sticks out in my mind as kind of a formative conversation. So so there's that, but you know, maybe kind of bookend it with what I was talking about just a little bit ago. You know, this is my second year out on the academic job market. You know, I've been putting out my CVs to various film departments, and you know, to be honest, I haven't really gotten all that many bites, and so perhaps there is some sort of, you know, I mean, maybe it's just the economy, maybe it's just like, you know, I wouldn't be a good fit, you know, perhaps, but I mean, it's certainly possible that perhaps some of it is, you know, oh, you know, look at what he primarily studies, it's, you know, Japanese animation, is that something that we really want to have in our departments? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not being able to talk with, you know, a lot of these people who, you know, who are reading over my CV, you know, I couldn't tell you. So perhaps there is still some kind of undercurrent of really academic anime. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that kind of sucks. all right. Jeff Tevitz asks, you contributed to the 1992 entry in the golden anniversary thing that he did last year. Did research of 1992 anime alter your view of anime in any substantial way?
I wouldn't say that it altered my view of it, but it was kind of interesting to just, you know, as an exercise to see, okay, you know, what came out in this particular year. And 92 was a really heavy hitter of a year. I'm trying to remember everything that I wrote about. I know Sailor Moon came out then, the you know, Sailor Moon anime. Yu Yu Hakusho came out then. Crayon Shin-chan started, which, you know, has always been, you know, way more, you know, it's way more popular, way more of a phenomenon in Japan than it was here. And some others too. But, you know, I wouldn't say that it, like I said, I wouldn't say that it changed my perception of it as much as it was just kind of really great to just kind of dive into a particular year and see what was going on, you know, at that one moment in time.
Okay. Ed Sizemore asks, Mamoru Oshii is the dreamiest director. Are there any hug pillows available for us true devotees?
I can't say that I've ever seen an Oshii hug pillow. I mean, I don't think it would be of him himself. It would probably be, you know, if one existed, it would probably be some sort of caricature of him as a dog. So, you know, make of that what you will.
All right. He also asks, more seriously, has Oshii become too eccentric for anyone but longtime fans to understand his films? Given how poorly his films do in Japan, why does Production IG still fund his works? Are his international sales that good? I kind of want to point out something here. Production IG doesn't pay out of pocket for Mamoru Oshii movies. That's a lot of international funding, if I'm not mistaken. Your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, his films, you know, I think you can kind of see that after Innocence, which was this huge, you know, multi-year, you know, project that, you know, that they spent, you know, months and months on particular scenes, getting them just right, you know, and, you know, it was an incredibly expensive film. You know, one of the next films that he does after that is, you know, like I said, this the Fast Food Grifters film, which was done with CG animation of photographs, and a lot of the people who kind of worked on it behind the scenes were actually college students who were kind of working on that. So, I mean, you can kind of see that maybe perhaps after Innocence, kind of the budget's perhaps scaling down. But, you know, then at the same time, you've got something like Skycrawlers, which, you know, I think, you know, honestly, budget-wise, I don't know how well these things, you know, did in Japan. But I mean, and I've seen with both Innocence and with Skycrawlers when it came out. I mean, not only do you have the films, but you do have, you know, both of them, and sometimes disconcertingly so. There is, of course, you know, a lot of merchandise associated with such things. So, you know, I'm not exactly privy to the economic details of it, but, you know, they must be doing well enough. And, you know, obviously Oshii doesn't mind working with, you know, relatively, you know, he's done films with relatively small budgets. And he also does, which I think has really enabled him to be maybe more creative as a filmmaker. I mean, I think that's kind of one of the reasons why I prefer Oshii to somebody like Miyazaki, who, you know, I mean, a Miyazaki film, you really kind of know, you know, what you're getting. Whereas with an Oshii film, you know, it could be this really well, you know, this kind of big budget animated film, or it could be kind of a very small budget live action film. It could fall somewhere in between. Of course, he's also, you know, Oshii, you know, like some others, he has done work in manga. He's done work in video games. Now he's done work in, you know, I have this kind of, it's almost kind of a visual novel-esque thing called Chimamiri, My Love, and that's been released. You know, it's coming out in chapters a little bit at a time, but I mean, that's kind of, it's almost kind of a visual novel, but it's for I've got it a copy of it on my iPhone. And so, you know, he kind of works, he can work in various kind of, you know, on a large scale or on a small scale. And so I think that is probably what might allow him the longevity that, you know, even if he can't get a really big budget, you know something working on the size and scale of Innocence, that, you know, he's got a number of other projects that, you know, might take him, you know, he'd gather a few actors, might take him a few days to shoot, and, you know, spend some time in post-production. One of the things that I do want to mention, and I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about this at all in talking to you, is that he does have purportedly another live action film coming out sometime this year called The Last Druid, Garm Wars, which that was I think it was last year it was filming up in Canada, and this is going to be his it's another live action film. It kind of sounds, you know, something along the lines of Avalon. But it's going to be his first English language film. You know, like Avalon was done all in Polish, so this will be all in English. I think it'll be – I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't really seen much come out about it. You know, it's been very – a lot of the details have been very secretive. I'm really looking forward to seeing that when it comes out too. So hopefully – you know, along with this new Pat Labor, we're going to get a new live-action Oshii film, hopefully shortly.
Cool. I had no idea. It'll be interesting to see what he does with English.
Yeah. I looking around online, I've actually managed to talk to a couple people who had participated in the filming of this last year. Unfortunately, I had tried to kind of get something set up so I could maybe have some interviews or maybe a little bit of a teaser in my book, you know, talking about Garm Wars. But the producer didn't really want that, and, you know, it's their film. You know, they can control that however they want. So, you know, I don't really have a whole lot on Garm Wars in my book, but, you know, hopefully we'll get more information on that coming up soon.
All right. Ben the Bear asks, besides the similarities between Red Spectacles and Alphaville, what other French New Wave links do you see in Oshii's work, if any?
I don't know about French New Wave so much as, but I mean, he definitely does have kind of an art house sensibility. I mean, if I was going to, I definitely see the Alphaville Red Spectacles connection, and Oshii has mentioned Godard before in interviews. If I was going to bring up other directors that it seems like Oshii has drawn influence from, definitely Andrei Tarkovsky. I mean, Oshii has said that he's, at least when he was kind of growing up and going through film school, he was, you know, really, really into Tarkovsky, and I think you can kind of see reflections of that in his films. He's also been a really big fan of a number of Polish directors, and I'm not even going to attempt with their names, but that's one of the reasons why he filmed Avalon in Poland. I mean, so you've got the influence of the Polish directors, in addition to the fact that when he was in when he was in Poland, he could get access to these kind of all the helicopters and the tanks and things that he could really use to populate his film. And I think you can see one of the why he liked that he liked filming in Poland so much is that it was maybe a year or so ago there was an Xbox game that was I'm trying to remember what exactly it was. We were kind of piloting a mech, and Oshii did a kind of a short promotional film for that. But that also, in order to film that, I mean, it was only maybe, you know, a minute or two, maybe three, but he went to Poland, met some of the same people there, you know, kind of some of the same fixers, to get the footage that he wanted in order to create this kind of short promotional film for this Xbox game. So yeah, I mean, you definitely have, you know, the influence of Polish filmmakers, of filmmakers like Tarkovsky. I don't know specifically about French New Wave, though. I'd have to give that a little bit more thought.
Okay. All right. We'll go ahead and wrap up with this one from Daniel Zelter, everyone's favorite.
Yay!
Yeah, he wants to know how you feel about the... tentatively, the guy who directed Snow White and the Huntsman is attached to the live-action Ghost in the Shell. He wants to know how you feel about that. And I would say, like, how do you feel about that project, sort of, in general?
You know, I'll be optimistic. You know, I haven't seen Snow White and the Huntsman, so I don't know how you know if it's good or bad. You know, I mean, I've heard, you know, reasonably decent things about it. You know, so, but I don't really have an opinion on the guy, on the director, one way or the other. Talking about the project in general, I don't think that it need. It's one of those things. Like, I don't think that it needs to be done. Like, I don't know how much is going to be gained from a live action Ghost in the Shell. But at the same time, you know, a live action, you know, Hollywood Ghost in the Shell, I think, can really bring a lot more attention to some of the originals. You know, so more attention to the Shiro manga, maybe more attention to Oshii's films, maybe more attention to Standalone Complex, perhaps. And I mean, I and that's kind of my opinion about remakes in general. I mean, you know, a lot of remakes I don't think need to be made, but perhaps if they bring, if they have the effect of bringing more attention to the original thing, and bringing more people over to that, and to seeing, okay, what way. Maybe this thing, okay, this Hollywood film is relatively interesting. Let's see what preceded it. You know, I don't know how many people actually kind of will go and do that, but, you know, if it brings more people and, you know, more fans into the franchise, then sure. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I don't think that, you know, a film would, you know, I don't think it's going to ruin Ghost in the Shell for anybody. Yeah, I mean, I think Shiro can do that all by himself. But.
yeah, no kidding. All right, well, yeah, I think it's a good attitude to have. It's sort of the way I feel about it. I don't really, like, I don't think the existence of a new thing or a new version ruins or otherwise diminishes the older versions. They still exist. You can still watch them. Maybe it's tough to watch them in a vacuum, but it's not like, because there's another version of Willy Wonka, that the Gene Wilder version is somehow horrible, diminished, or that they burned all copies of it, so you can't go back and enjoy that one on its own. You know, so yeah, I don't know. I think it has a low chance of being good, but I'll hold out hope that it will be. So I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely go see it. Right. Yeah, we'll see it, and who knows? Maybe when a live action Ghost in the Shell comes out, we might actually get, you know, a re-release of Innocence on Blu-ray over here, so it'll stop going for $60 to $70 a pop on eBay.
Yeah, really. Yeah, hopefully. Okay, man. Well, so people can find your book over on Amazon.
Yeah, and yeah, also, it's up on Amazon, and you can get it there. You can get it on Right Stuff. You can probably, you know, order it from your favorite local bookstore. You know, it's published by Palgrave Macmillan, which, I mean, they're a fairly significant publisher, so they should, you know, I don't know how many bookstores are gonna, you know, carry it, because, you know, the film sections of bookstores tend to be small in general. But yeah, if you're interested, yeah, check it out. Amazon, Write Stuff. Yeah, ask your bookstore for it.
Cool. Well, best of luck to you in your future endeavors, and thanks for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Brian for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it, and we'll see you all next week.